You are listening to CFRO Community Radio Station on 102.7 FM. The upcoming show, Conscious Living Radio, is a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation.
If we wanna last, around the last big trees, and with her eyes says, "Join me, keep me warm, keep me company." The bulldozers are drying near. With her heart, she stills my fear. Nothing to worry with you right here. Love, hope does spring.
So, Andrew, I have the privilege of introducing Eric Sapperston to you. Eric and I met over 2 years ago at an amazing festival called the Raw Spirit Festival in Santa Barbara. And right when I met him, there was amazing electric energy. He's a really incredible, powerful, conscious, present, strong, confident person. And right away, he started to shift my mind in so many different things about seeing how I was speaking in a language that wasn't necessarily creating my reality to be the way I wanted it to be. And it was probably like the first time I've ever had anyone do any kind of shifting on me. So it was really like very, very impactful. So to tell you a little bit about Eric and his story is that out of college, Eric didn't really want to get a job like the rest of his friends. And so challenged by his mentor, he decided to take a trip and make it more meaningful. And the trip that he took was that he and three of his friends drove around the country of the United States in a VW van, along with his golden retriever, Jack. And they interviewed some of the most powerful people in the world. And back in the day when there wasn't a lot of internet and cell phones, he basically went around from payphone to payphone calling up these people and getting a lot of no's, but never actually taking no for an answer. And so was completely determined to make something out of this trip that he was on. And so out of, you know, over 200 interviews later, he interviewed many, many influential people, people like Dan Millman, who wrote The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, President Jimmy Carter, the First Lady in Space, Henry Winkler, Billy Crystal, several other people. And out of all of that, created a documentary film that was pitched actually to Walt Disney and won many, many film festivals and is still being sold and inspiring many people. To this day, like we meet people all the time that meet Eric and say like, oh my God, I saw your film like 5 years ago and it completely changed my life. And out of that, Eric also wrote a book called Live in Wonder. And the concept behind the book is about taking your own trip. So it gives you guidance on being able to call up some of the most influential people and ask them out for coffee, whatever you want to learn, whatever you want to find out for yourself. It's just about why don't you call up the person that already knows how to do it and then go interview them and ask them all these questions so that you could learn from them. So he has a book called Live in Wonder, and now he's also on a bigger initiative about inspiring the world to live in wonder. So there's a website that's being created with tons of amazing content and an apparel line and the books there and the movies there. And Eric also has a speaking career where he's motivational, inspirational public speaker, where he gets hired by big companies to speak all over the world and to usually as a keynote speaker to open up or close big conferences, or he's spoken to tens of thousands of people, and just is an amazing, interesting, powerful guy. And this is going to be a fabulous interview between the two of you, and I feel really privileged that I get to be here, and thank you. And this is going to be great, and I think all your listeners are going to be really intrigued and interested in what Eric has to say.
Thank you so much.
Well, first of all, Andrew, I just wanted to say thank you. It's a privilege to be here on Unconscious Radio. Well, this is Conscious Radio.
Well, we're trying to be conscious.
Oh, I see. I thought when I was told it was Unconscious Radio, I was ready. I was really excited to come. I didn't realize it was conscious. Then I'm going to have to step up my game here.
Yeah, there's a switch usually in our heart. And if heart is on, it's conscious. If only mind is on, it's unconscious. So why did you decide to do something that most of us want to do, but almost none of us does? Mm-hmm. Go around the country and talk to the most amazing people you were able to encounter on that way.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the real origins of why I did this is that I grew up with a father that is crippled. He had a stroke when he was 28 years old. I was not born yet. He was married to my mom. They had two kids. He had been working, he put himself through college, he was the main breadwinner of our family. My mom had planned to be the housewife with these two little kids, and then all of a sudden, on a fluke, my dad ended up realizing that he had a situation that in his neck, and that it was like a tumor bleeding, and all of a sudden, before he knew it, one thing led to another, and then he had a stroke that left him completely paralyzed on the entire left side of his body. And so my family turned on a dime, and my mom ended up having to become the main breadwinner and go to work, and she ended up becoming a nurse and put the food on our table. My dad never could work again and was disabled my whole life. And then I came 4 years after that and grew up relatively in an angry household, because my dad was really bitter and frustrated, and my parents really stuck together, but it was not in the most ideal scenario. Growing up in that world, I knew firsthand that life presents no guarantees, that most people live like there is a tomorrow. And growing up with a crippled father in my house, I realized that life can change in a second. And so there was always been a passion and a drive and a tenacity and an excitement to live my life to the fullest, like every day is like my last day.
Mm-hmm.
And so growing up like that, when I graduated from college, I had spent time as a student body president, a fraternity president, a resident advisor. I'd been really active in school and kind of looked at my world, and I thought, man, everybody wants to graduate from college and have an extraordinary life. But as I look around my community, most people aren't living extraordinary lives. So what happens? Why do some people go on to live extraordinary lives and others don't? And that question just kept haunting me. And then as I went through college, I started to kind of figure out, well, if I want to get up in the morning excited and go to bed fulfilled, what can I do to increase my odds of doing that? And that's when I read this quote in college that said, to know the road ahead, ask those coming back.
Hmm.
And so it dawned on me that if I wanted to live an extraordinary life and get up in the morning excited and go to bed fulfilled, it would behoove me to go talk to people who have done that over many decades and find out the values they live by, the struggles they've endured, and what advice and counsel they would give to me and my generation to better prepare ourselves for the road ahead.
Mm-hmm. Wow, amazing. I'm curious, though, in living in households where there's lots of bitterness, anger, frustration, and disappointment, I guess there are many choices one can, or many lessons one can learn from household. Like, I would see that someone would become angry and disappointment and have no trust in life or faith in the future. Based on the reality that you have been surrounded by. But you use that situation to completely reverse the odds. Out of this, you created passion to look for more, to inspire yourself to go out and search. When do you think this starts? Why some people will just give up and before even making a first step, and why others like you use any opportunity to learn something from it and to find inspiration?
Great question. I think for me, growing up was so painful, and the thought of life not being fair just circulated around my head. It was a constant conversation in our home. Like, life isn't supposed to be fair. Life isn't fair. There was a lot of fighting, yelling. There was just a sense of helplessness, mm-hmm. and powerlessness that I experienced. And I'm not exactly sure the turning point or when it started to shift for me, but I started to have this internal dialogue that this can't be by accident, and all this suffering that's going on, it has to be in some way for my highest good. I guess the methodology started to happen where, okay, what if all this is training me somehow?
Mm-hmm.
What if all this is shaping me and designing me, and that I could use all this to go out and, like, I guess the image that's coming to mind is that you know, like a beaker of my mother and a beaker of my father, and then you know, like a science lab, you put those two together and you create me, and then you have this whole experience of my family dynamic. And if all of a sudden I feel like I'm being chiseled and shaped and designed to be of service somehow, it seemed that my life, all these elements began to sharpen me, and I realized that coming from all this pain, I could relate to people on a deep level. I wasn't afraid of other people's pain. If folks were going to dark places, I could stand there with them. Mm-hmm. And so I think as I got older, I started to realize that I was of service in a profound way, and that all that suffering actually made me stronger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there is when you share that, the image comes to my mind back from my country. We used to say that in order to make steel hard, you got to heat it up and then throw it into cold water, and then heat it up and throw it back into cold water over and over again. And each time when you do that, it becomes stronger and stronger. And that same happens to human being. If we sustain this pain or hardness or heat, and then the disappointment or any other experience that comes our way, each time either kills us or makes us stronger. Those are the two choices. And you chose kill. I don't mean physical death. It's a death of our passion, death of our goals, of our the dreams, desires. We become sheltered and withdrawn from life. Or it makes us stronger to look deeper and harder for whatever we want to look for. And that's what you chose.
I guess thank you. Yeah, I think the image again that comes to mind is the Lorax from Dr. Seuss. And I think that image I had when I was a kid, that since I grew up in this house, I was very feisty, I challenged authority, I wasn't afraid to speak my truth, I got into trouble a lot, I would stand for the kid who was being, you know, judged or beaten or whatever injustice was happening, I would be an advocate. Mm-hmm. So I started to believe that I speak for the trees, like the Lorax. I speak for the trees have no tongues, you know, and mm-hmm. that I would be a stand for things. And I think early on that started to mold me into a leader, into a spokesperson, into a communicator. And then with that became responsibility. And early on, I didn't know how to wield that responsibility. Early on, I was this guy with a lot of power, but didn't know how to use it. And I've had to learn and grow and get humbled and make a lot of mistakes and become a better sorcerer as the years go by.
So paint us a picture or image. You are driving in a van with three friends from city to city, looking up in the yellow pages or white pages, I guess, the names of people that sound familiar. And when you're doing it, did you have an image of what this is for? How is this going to shape, and you know what you're actually planning to do with this?
The answer to that is absolutely not. There's a great line by John Steinbeck, who wrote a book called Travels with Charlie, who said, "Sometimes you take a trip, and sometimes the trip takes you." Mm-hmm. This trip has taken me beyond my wildest dreams. When I set off to go on this adventure, the only thing that I knew was that I wanted to bridge a gap between young people and elders in America. I wanted to open up a dialogue between those that want to learn and those that want to teach. Mm-hmm. I did know that. I had a very clear vision. Beyond that, I had no idea if anybody was going to say yes, and I certainly didn't know what would evolve from there. I set off on the trip. I was in my VW bus with my dog at first. And then I would literally, as you said, I'd pick up a payphone, I'd grab a phone book, and I would go, gosh, I wonder who, you know, I wonder how to get to the founder of the Ritz-Carlton, mm-hmm. or I'd like to figure out how to get to the President Jimmy Carter, mm-hmm. or I wonder what it would be like to talk to the director of the FBI. And then I would just literally start making phone calls from the side of the
road. I think the FBI should be easy, right? You just pretend to be,
you'd think
Al-Qaeda or whatever.
It'd be interesting. But so I just started making phone calls. And when I started getting access to some pretty extraordinary people, the dialogue that we would have would be mutually inspiring. I would learn a tremendous amount from them. They would be extremely excited that we spent time. Conversations that were supposed to last 20 minutes would last 3 hours, go into the evening. I'd get invited to people's homes for dinner. I'd get invited to go backstage to concerts, fly in corporate jets to meetings, play golf, do all kinds of amazing things. And at the end of meetings, somebody would turn around and introduce me to more friends they had. And one thing led to another. And before I knew it, I'm really bouncing all around, talking to all these amazing folks. And then people are saying, hey, you should document it.
Right. So initially you didn't have a camcorder with you?
No. One of the things I encourage people all the time is that to live an extraordinary life, you don't necessarily know what's around the corner. You have to trust the process. Mm-hmm. And what prevents many people from living extraordinary lives is they want to know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you take an adventure, by definition, an adventure is not practical. So to try to figure it out on the front end is ridiculous.
Right.
You have to be willing to let go and trust the process.
Surrender. So let's go back to this part where the one thing that you felt you knew, you wanted to bridge gap between elders or people who know and young generation, the people who want to know. How did that transpire?
How did that transpire? How did I come up with that?
How did you kind of come up with that? Why and how? And have do you feel that you have bridged that gap?
I definitely feel like I have played a role in bridging that gap. I think that gap is always in play. You know, for me again, it was back to looking at wise people. I just wanted to talk to wise people. I didn't want to trust that I could maneuver through the world just on my own. You know, I figured, why not increase my odds of talking, you know, succeeding by talking to people who have already done it? And so that was basically the premise of bridging the gap. Opening up that dialogue, like I said, turned out to be inspiring for both parties. And not only did I interview successful elders, but I also went and interviewed peers. So I was at coffee shops or at concerts, and then I would essentially, my job was to be a conduit. I would say all the time, I'm not an expert. I'm just a conduit. I'm just going to go ask people in my generation what they're struggling with. And then I'm going to go to the wisest people on the planet and get answers.
And do you feel that those wisest so-called people on the planet actually have answers that we should be following? It's a loaded question, because obviously I work with young people and they are disappointed with how we, you know, older generation, not you, maybe you, me, is handing out this world, this universe back to young generation in a way that is worse than when we received it. This planet is in a worse shape than when we took it into our hands. So can this young generation learn from us, or from this generation that screwed up this place, in effect?
I think that is a loaded question. I think there are guiding principles and universal truths that I think some elders have understood. And so to increase your odds of succeeding, I think there's some great wisdom that can be garnered from people who have achieved greatness over decades. Then I think the spin on that is that, yeah, I think that elders have not done a good job of our environment, or making sure that our water is clean, that our food is full of nutrients. But I also think that, you know, the people who I met at the time I met them were, you know, these are people who are volunteering. They're on, you know, boards to help eradicate polio, or they're trying to, you know, help people with cleft lips in foreign countries. I mean, these people are still good people.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that a lot of things have changed. A lot of truths have come out that weren't necessarily truths that they knew about. I mean, I think most people fundamentally are good people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, every generation has some crisis they've got to deal with. It's not like we're brand new on that. We've had to deal with things. It's a tough time to be alive right now. There's a lot of things that we've got to step up. And I'm not a cynic. I'm excited. I think, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. we'll see what we do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was actually interviewing someone yesterday, and we tried during our conversation to redefine word crisis, because crisis almost it's a label that is something negative, there's something critical, there is something terribly wrong going on. And he was arguing that crisis is the kind of necessary component of new birth to happen, that this is an important part of evolution, important part of growth. Without crisis, without setbacks, we would be most likely stuck in one place. So looking at crisis as opportunity instead of something that is pulling us back.
I think this is one of the most exciting times in history to be alive.
Hmm. So if you can, for those young people who are listening to us, if you can in kind of list the most important learnings that you have experienced on that trip, talking to a couple hundred most influential people in North America, how would you compress that into a few minutes?
I would say the most salient points that I can offer young people, all people for that matter, is one, the importance of being yourself. One of my favorite sayings is, be yourself, everyone else is taken.
Hmm.
And that we are a culture that spends an awful lot of time trying to be liked. And I think it's more important to be respected than to be liked. So the way to be respected, in my opinion, is to be uniquely who you are and to stand comfortably in your own skin and to speak your truth and to live your highest purpose. And so I think, you know, that's one of the most salient things I learned from people that are living extraordinary lives, is that they're living extraordinary lives because they're being themselves, and they're not taking no for an answer. They're tenacious. They're filled with passion, and they go after what it is they want and what they believe that their purpose on earth is to be, and they're usually of service to something higher than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think a second thing would be the willingness to trust the process completely, to throw yourself, all of your whole being, be somebody who's all in, play full out with everything you got, and then trust the process, trust the ride, enjoy
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no good, there is no bad. Just take the ride and keep adjusting your sails and keep sailing towards where you want to go, and take feedback as feedback. If somebody tells you it's a horrible idea, then look for the truth within what they're saying, if it is, and then readjust and keep going. And if somebody says it's great, say thanks and still keep going. Third, I would say that one of the big lessons I learned in my journey was that you know, they say what separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help. That again, I think people believe they have to fake it till they make it, and never let them see you sweat, and only raise your hand when they're sure. Yet the people that live extraordinary lives are willing to enroll other people into their vision by asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you want to go after something, you just have to know what it is you want to go after. But very few people are experts when they start anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the wisdom of being able to surround yourself with people smarter than you and be able to ask for guidance and direction. Fourth, I would say, realize that success doesn't lie in the future. That success lies with you right now, doing today and every day, excellently, whatever it is you're doing. then sooner or later you may get a reward, which you may interpret as success, but it's only a reward for doing excellently whatever it is you say you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That was taught to me by the founder of the Ritz-Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
And then fifth and lastly, I would say that one of the messages that President Jimmy Carter taught me was to never underestimate the power of the individual to make a difference.
Hmm. If someone feels that you're asking us to be ourselves, because everyone else is taken, as you say, and if I don't like who I am, if I feel bad about myself and I want to improve, the reason why I'm reading books, the reason why I'm going out, the reason why I'm talking, I want to learn how to be better me, because who am I is not what I want to be. What would you recommend to those who don't feel good in their own skin?
I would say there's a huge distinction.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, I would let those people know that who they are is perfect. And I know we've heard that before and it seems kind of trite, but why not believe it? Why not believe that who you are is whole and complete? Who you are is enough. You're a descendant from the divine. You're just, you know, that we're born in this world, you know, as a beautiful entity. And then given our experiences, given our backgrounds, given what happens in our lives, we start to believe that we're less than, not good enough, not smart enough, not pretty enough, not talented enough. But those are separate from our core essence. I think at the core of who we are, we're amazing. And then I think all of us, including me, have behaviors that don't serve us. So I would draw a distinction between the two. I think where people make a huge mistake is that they collapse who they're being with their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think who we're being, who we are as beings, are amazing, loving, kind, supportive, nurturing. Yet I think that we have habits that sometimes separate us. And I think those habits, we start to believe that we're separate. So as a good friend of mine says that we've ingested a lot of separation medicine. We've taken pills and experiences and believe that somehow we're separate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the more we can realize that we're not separate, that we're a lot more alike than we are different, that we're part of the human race and that we're all in this together, and realize that, you know, telling a disempowering story about yourself is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, given the same set of circumstances, you know, my father, crippled, was angry and was pissed off. Yet there are several people who are crippled, who are Olympic athletes and have become senators and have written books and went on to create masterpieces. You know,
mm-hmm.
So you can tell any story you want about your life. The facts are the same, but the narrative that you choose to tell about your life is the choice that you make. And so,
mm-hmm.
The question I would ask is, are you, you know, as an individual, are you telling a heroic tale, an inspiring tale, or are you telling a victim story?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Either one is totally fair game, but the heroic story will take you down one path and a victim story will take you down another, and it really comes down, it's like a, really comes down to your choice.
Mm-hmm. And from meeting all those amazing, incredible, successful, passionate, creative people, what would you say for most of them, if we ask them what is the purpose of life, what would they usually say?
I ask that question to everybody I interviewed, and without fail, everybody I interview would chuckle and laugh and say, I have no idea. And then they might catch their breath and you know, I'd say the purpose of life, they would say, be to live a life you love.
Hmm. What is your purpose of life?
My purpose in life is to inspire people. Inspire people to action. To encourage people to go and play full out. To not make excuses.
Hmm.
There are no guarantees of anything. you know, I set off to go meet all these people and had no idea it would become an award-winning film and play in theaters across the country and be a success. I had no idea. There was never a guarantee that that was going to happen. And it never mattered. It was, you know, it was just the pursuit of it that was way more interesting. And then it turned out to be great. Mm-hmm. I've been fortunate that many things that I've pursued have turned out to really be impactful to other people. But I never know that that's going to happen when you're doing it. You just have to go after it and be fully in the game.
Yeah, so going back to your advice before, it's not about being attached to the outcome. It's about being the best you can be in a moment, right now.
That's
living
it.
Fully.
Moment by moment by moment, just playing full out. And then, you know, there has never been a guarantee that anything I've done is going to be successful.
But the guarantee is that if you live your life fully right now, you got your price, you got your everything that you want out of it right now. And if at the end of this you get an award, or if your movie becomes successful by the community or standards, that's an addition. You already got your price when you were traveling, when you were meeting those people, when you're being in the field, right, of this amazing project.
Back in the day when, you know, the Westerns, you know, cowboys and whatnot, there's a phrase, you know, die with your boots on.
Hmm.
And I, you know, lately we've been having this discussion around 2012 and what may happen and all that. And so I've just been reminding everyone that I love to, hey, we don't know what's going to happen, but you might as well go out with your boots on.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is to be just, this is not the time to be in a job you hate. This is not the time to be talking about something that you want to do. This is not the time to be saving all your money for a trip that you want to take someday when you retire. I think this is the time, like any time has been, and this is how my whole life has been, this is the time to be exactly who you're supposed to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
To get in alignment with your being and play full out. And then if you play full out, it doesn't really matter. If 2012 is it, go out with your boots on. Be the man you've always wanted to be, and be the woman you've always wanted to be. You know, and make no excuses.
Mm-hmm.
I had recently. I live in Maui, Hawaii, and I recently was hanging out with this very wise man who said, "The greatest distraction facing our planet is that I'm unhappy, and you're the one to blame." It's time for us to give up being victims at any level, take 100% responsibility for our lives, strap on our boots and go out and play the biggest game we can play.
Mm-hmm. What is your opinion or approach towards consumer training that we receive from almost the day we are born, where media, society, church is pointing outside for some goals that we're supposed to strive towards that are going to make us happy? Bigger house, faster car, whatever other measures of success, more money on the account, more trips, more relationships, whatever the measuring stick is. And your message is completely different. How can you help those that have been surrounded with message of consuming, going after, getting more for myself, because there is a limited amount of stuff, and more I get for myself, the more I'm going to be rewarded or appreciated for my success?
Mm-hmm. My business partner, I talk about this a lot, that we make up that one of the greatest fears, another great fear that's facing our planet, is that people are afraid they're going to lose their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People are losing jobs, people are losing homes, the economy is tanking, have no idea what's going to happen, and people have put tons of money on credit cards, they've bought houses they can't afford, they're overextended, and now, you know, they're getting fired from jobs, and people are really panicked that they're going to lose the lifestyle that they've believe is happy, you know, happiness for them.
Mm-hmm.
as they say in the old country, I say mazel tov, that I think more people could lose more things. I think there is something really beautiful about having less. I think the joy in life is having less. All the great, wise, spiritual teachers sold everything they had, got rid of everything, and went back to the basics. I live on a 13-acre organic farm in Maui, Hawaii, with a bunch of farmers that walk around barefoot and eat food from the land and get water from the source and are the happiest, smartest, joyous people I know. And so I think I've really come to realize that less is more. So I think it's an exciting time. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And my counsel to everybody would be to begin consciously choosing to let go of things. It's way more powerful to choose to let go than to have it be ripped out from underneath you.
Right. And everything that we need to be happy is within us.
Totally. It's simple. All the great truths, always simple. Yeah, people just know where your food comes from, know where your water comes from, and be in community with amazing people.
For those who would like to get more of you, either through your movies, books, or your speaking engagements, what is the best way to find out where you are and what you are doing?
The best way to stay connected would be to go to our website, liveinwonder.com, LiveinWonder, liveinwonder.com, as well as my name, Eric, Eric, Saperston, S-A-P as in Paul, E-R-S-T as in Tom, O-N, ericsaperston.com.
And we are going to have both of those links posted on Conscious Living Radio as well. The last advice to hundreds of thousands of people that are listening to our show.
Remember to breathe, drink lots of water, and be grateful for everything. No exceptions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.
Now I'm going to play an audio track from one of Eric's presentations.
And I'll be your crying shoulder. I'll be your love and suicide. And
so much. How you doing? My name is Edwin McCain. I've been on the road for a billion years, and every once in a while I am absolutely floored and amazed at the things that I run across on the road. About a year ago I was doing a gig in Atlanta, Georgia, and a friend of mine said, "You got to see this thing. It's called The Journey." And what a story it really is. And so I'm honored and pleased to introduce to you my friend Eric Saperston.
It's good to see you all. The story I'm about to tell you is a true story. And I read a quote in college that said, "To know the road ahead, ask those coming back." And I thought, what better way to kind of get a glimmer of what it takes to really be extraordinary than to go out and seek out the people on the top of the food chain and talk to them?
This is an absolute pleasure.
Oh, don't get silly.
This is so cool. I'm doing really well.
I don't claim to be an expert, but I want to be a conduit. I want to build a bridge between those people in our generation who are eager to learn and those people who are very skilled and knowledgeable who want to teach.
So I took my golden retriever, Jack. And Jack and I packed up the bus, got excited about this adventure, and we hit the road.
It's a beautiful life. It's just as advertised. It's all for one low price. Just read the fine print, and you'll be content with your beautiful life.
So I made a phone call from a payphone to the president of the Ritz-Carlton. It said, my name's Eric Sapperston. I'm traveling around the country. I'm living out of my Volkswagen bus. I'm selling sexy kind grilled cheese sandwiches made with love for $1 at rest stops to, you know, fund my dream and do my, you know, my journey. And, you know, I've made enough money where I can take you out for a cup of coffee. I'll treat for a cup of coffee. But if you order anything else on the menu, you're on your own. And he chuckled just like you did. And he said, well, I'll do better than that. How would you like to come to the Ritz-Carlton and have high tea with me? Okay. And I was talking to him. I said, Mr. Schulze, what does it mean to be successful? And he dropped some knowledge on me. He said, success doesn't lie in the future. Success lies with you right now, doing today and every day excellently whatever it is you are doing. Then sooner or later, you may get a reward, which you may interpret as success, but it's only a reward for your daily excellencies, for your daily successes. And I looked at him and I said, wow, that's very cool. I said, I'm going to commit to you, Mr. Schulze, to be the kind of person that does excellently whatever it is I'm doing. And I went back into my own tent that night, and I was lying there. It was really late, and I was tossing and turning. I was so excited. And I just kept thinking to myself, I'm not quite sure where I'm going, but I'm on my way.
I'm awake in my heart, still dreaming. It's 3 a.m. Outside I hear the souls still screaming. It's been so long, and you know since my head's been this.
While I was in this plane one day, I don't know if it was serendipity or grace or divine intervention, I sat next to 12-time Olympic gold medalist Carl Lewis. So I pulled out my journal, you know, and I out of my backpack, and I said, you know, you won't believe this, Mr. Lewis, but I've been traveling around the country interviewing phenomenal people, and guess what? You qualify. And I said, what's it like to be you? And he said, well, Eric, you and I have been talking for a while, and there's a person sitting behind me who hears us talking. And he's thinking to himself, that's 12-time Olympic gold medalist Carl Lewis. Right there. Talking to this guy he doesn't know him from Adam. And he's talking about his life and his experiences. I mean, Carl Lewis, man, I love him when he won the Olympics. And I love him now. And then he said, but there's a guy right behind him who's thinking to himself, man, look, that's Carl Lewis. He is so arrogant and so cocky. He's bragging about his life to this guy he doesn't even know. Man, I didn't like him when he won the Olympics, and I don't like him now. Loser. And then Carl said something that was so wise. He said, there's a guy right across the aisle from us who's thinking to himself, who's Carl Lewis? And I thought, man, this guy's got it together. I mean, he's a household name. But what he's telling me and what he's telling us is that if you folks have the courage to follow your dream and do what you love, you're willing to ask for help, you're willing to be committed to the dream no matter what, you're able to enroll people into a vision and make magic happen in your life, and you are so good at your own personal journey that the world honors you and says, here's 12 gold medals for being so extraordinary. A third of the people are going to love you. A third are going to hate you. And a third either aren't going to care either way about you. So all I say tonight is to be authentically who you are and just do your thing.
Just do your thing. If it makes you feel better. Shuffling feet. Look up on me now. This young man's lost his way.
all very much.
And that's how we got to the end of our show. Thank you for being with us. You can listen to our live shows on 102.7 FM every Wednesday from 6 to 7. If you miss our show or you want to listen to it again, you can find all archive shows on consciouslivingradio.org. And now, at the end, I'm going to play the music from my favorite musician on earth, Shimshai. And for those listeners who love him as much as I do, good news. Shimshai is coming to Vancouver. He's going to be here on September the 9th. All details will be presented and will be available on our webpage, consciouslivingradio.org. Thank you again. Good night.
I believe in the essence of love. We are letting go of the self. We see and look within you to be. I see that heaven is a part of me, and I can begin to find my way home. Now I can see that I've always been what I'm looking to find, just learning to be. And I know all will come in its time to be. Every lesson must surely reach to the core of the inner teaching I am seeking. And now that I find there's no secret meaning, 'cause I've always been what I wanted to be. Now I can see, looking within to find my way home. Now I am free, and there's no place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is, and there it shall be. Home is where thy heart is, and there can be free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where thy heart is eternally. Home is where thy heart is, and there it shall be. Home is where thy heart is, and there can be free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where thy heart is eternally. Letting go all conception we hold so tight. Any question of wrong or right, all that is shall forever be just as it should. And to fight against evil we serve no good. And the walls you've relied on come crumbling down. Now you will see, revealing the delicate center within. Now you are free. And I've always been what I'm looking to find, just learning to be. Now I can begin to find my way home. Now I can see. And there's no place
place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is. No place like home is where thy heart is, and there it shall be. Home is where thy heart is, and there can be free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where thy heart is eternally. Home is where thy heart is, and there it shall be. Home is where thy heart is, and there can be free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where thy heart is eternally. And there's no place like home is where my heart is free to be in love eternally. Home is where my heart is free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where my heart is free to be within love for eternity. Home is where my heart is free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where my heart is free to be within love for eternity. Home is where my heart is free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where my heart is free to be within love for eternity. Home is where my heart is free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. And there's no place like home is where thy heart is, and there it shall be. Home is where thy heart is, and there can be free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where thy heart is eternally. Home is where thy heart is, and there it shall be. Home is where thy heart is, and there can be free to dwell in the light of the one I believe. Home is where thy heart is eternally. I believe in the presence of love we are, letting go of the self we see, and look within you to be. I see that heaven is a part of me.